Hey, Craig.
Hey, Jeff.
What's up, man?
Not much. We're kind of in that almost summertime cadence at this point.
I know. Not a heck of a lot going on at the moment.
Well, yeah, especially when, you know, the sports that are going on aren't winning a lot. And then, I mean, of course, you know, we probably could have recorded last week. There was a fairly big event in like the Wazoo sphere, and we'll talk about that. But we'll definitely talk about that. This is episode 218 of Podcast Versus Everyone. I'm Craig Powers. With me, as usual, is Jeff Neusser. And Jeff, yes. Okay, so neither of us went to the game, but it happened anyway. They did it without us there. I guess
what a bunch of jerks.
I know. Gardner Minshew was there. Fine.
Yeah.
And Gardner Minshew had some other things to do on the Palouse that week, as we've seen. Yeah. Let's just talk about that right off the top, honestly. Like,
yeah.
We got an official ass Wazoo beer. And official we will ass be drinking. Beer. This will be the podcast beer of the show at some point, I guarantee.
Yes. Like, yeah, for sure.
And probably when we're drinking it in one of the fine Cougar-owned establishments. And we'll be recording in one of those when we do that.
Yep.
But, Old Crimson Legendary Lager. Fucking sick that they got Old Crimson branding on that. And to do a lager, something you can crush at tailgates all day.
Yeah,
I love it, man. I'm gonna. They said so. They're saying it's going and it's launching initially at the West Side Flatstick Pubs, friends of the show, also friends of the show, Marco Polo. They are also having the launch party there on Saturday, at 3 p.m. You can also get samples of it on Friday at the Cougs First event, I believe. Very, very cool. I'm very excited. Like I love this. You know, Paradise Creek did that way too long of a name beer a few years ago. And I think that went to like a scholarship fund or something, but I sought that. Like I looked everywhere for it, and actually the best place to find it was the grocery outlet in Pullman, but that was hard to find, but now this is being made by Pike Brewing, which is now under the same umbrella as Fremont Brewing, so very, very strong distribution network. I know on the west side there was a Northwest Beverage distributing them, It once they can get the production up and they start canning it, I would tell, you know, if you have a favorite bar, if you live in Washington, you have a favorite bar, go tell, you know, favorite bar, favorite beer store, tell them to buy it, you know, tell them, put it in their ear. Like, you know, hey, if you know the person that buys the beer there. So, you know, let's get the demand as high as possible. Cause this money's going to the collective. We've heard that Iowa State makes $100,000 a month from it, the Iowa State's collective, which when you're looking at what WSU currently pulls in the collective, that'll be a big percentage. Now you and I have debated on whether, you know, a million plus a year would make a difference. You know, it maybe, but it will, like that's a huge boon. Like that's like a big donor coming in and giving.
Well, yeah,
a,
I mean, it's basically passive income, right?
Yeah,
like it's not these are not dollars you're having to hustle for. You know, it's people are buying beers, people are drinking beers, they're drinking beers anyway. And if they are, if you know, if you got the good distribution, and you can pick this up, you know, at Safeway or whatever, and you walk in and you're like, "Hey, go Cougs," and you pick up the beer at Safeway. You know, I mean, it's like it's a pretty low effort, high return endeavor for the collective, which is, you know, I mean, those are the kinds of things you always want. I mean, when I used to do fundraising with my students for, you know, trips and stuff, kids were like, you know, let's do a car wash. And I'm like, car washes fucking suck, man. Like you stand out there all day and maybe somebody gives you $3 and it's like, you're out there all day long and you're like, "Oh, look, we got $130. This is so great."
Like, it's like, yeah, terrible. 20 people worked 12 hours to get that $130.
Yeah, to get $130. And so I'm like, you know, I was always like, okay, how can we get, so eventually we did like a battle of the bands. That was good. You know, we would sell tickets and, you know, but you want like that quick, easy, high return. And, you know, the margins, I'm sure, are pretty small on this, you know, individually, right? Like on a per can or per six pack basis or whatever. But it's like the volume, right? We can do volume with this thing because we all know what Cougs can do when it comes to,
yeah,
when it comes to drinking beer, but when you are, when there is a perceived challenge on the table,
yeah,
said alcohol,
yes.
Like that's where I think that's where Cougs really shine. You know, like, oh, let's drink this place dry, you know, or whatever. You know, this seems to be kind of that. Like, hey, you know, let's drink all the beer they can make. It all goes to a good cause, and so that I think will be quite the motivating factor. So, and I'm thrilled that, I mean, nothing against Paradise Creek. This has nothing to do with them, but you know, the fact that it's a Seattle operation with, you know, really excellent distribution, I think that's a really huge deal. You know, I mean, we all know that,
yes,
you know, the vast majority of our alumni live, you know, over here where we live anyway. So, you know, that's a big thing, right? The vast majority of the people who are going to be buying it live over here. And then you've got, you know, if you know, the Fremont network is in play, man. I mean, every grocery store and every tap room and everything has Fremont in it around here. So
I'm curious about that, because I know Fremont and Pike have merged now. But the interesting thing is that they had different distributors before. So I don't know if it's, I don't know how well Pike is distributed, like on the east side of the state. I know it is.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen it over there. And I know Northwest Beverage, I don't know if there's a different one than does it over here. But I think that that Fremont had I think Fremont had Columbia distribution. I think they had different ones before, but they are, so like, I know all of the production of Pike beer is going to be at Fremont's production facility in Ballard. So, and Fremont's one of the third largest beer producer in the state, behind, the first is Georgetown and then the second is Elysian,
yep.
You know, separate from, so yeah, the first Georgetown, second's Elysian, but and then Fremont has risen to third. So they do produce a lot of beer and they have the capacity to produce a lot of beer. So that's good. Pike does have their production facility in Soto. I don't know if they're still going to be using that, but they should be able to meet the demand. It's already listed as a beer on Pike's website. So I think it's gonna be like a flagship type beer. Like they're gonna make it all the time. And so that's good. This is not going to be like a one-off. Like it's just going to keep being made. And actually I've seen like Iowa State has two different beers made by two different breweries. So yeah. This could be maybe one of you know, if they find another, you know, maybe a, you know, maybe like a No Lie or someone else could also hop in on that as well. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. I have a feeling it's gonna set, like, I have a feeling it's gonna sell out early. Like, it's gonna be, we're gonna be like chasing it around to find it. Obviously, yeah. It's just gonna be draft only at first. But I think like the demand, like, they'll meet the demand eventually, and once they do, this could be a, you know, the Cougs are gonna buy this. Like, I already know. Yeah. I'm gonna have the, like, once it's cans, I'm gonna have this in my fridge all the time. Like, I'm never not gonna have it. And then when you go to the tailgates over the football season, you're gonna see it everywhere.
It's gonna be a point of pride, yeah. Right? Like, people are gonna be looking around each other, going, "Hey, you know, how come you're not drinking the legendary lager?"
Well, it's like you see people drinking like $130 Drew Bledsoe Cab Savs at the tailgates, and they drink those $35 wines with the Coug heads on them. People who would normally probably never spend more than $8 on a bottle of wine have a $35 like Coug head wine, you know. So like people, and God, that's why it was so huge getting an iconic brand associated with it, like having Old Crimson on there.
Yes.
And the can is sick. Like the can art is great. It's got kind of the rolling.
They nailed it from a branding perspective. Like you said, you know, getting Old Crimson on board, you know, the branding being lent to the can there was pretty massive. And I don't know, man, like just the whole, like, Old Crimson obviously can't have any of the school, you know, markings on it, but you know, you get the, everybody knows what Old Crimson is, and you know, that's its own, you know,
they use that cougar
term. Yeah, they use the old, you know, kind of prowling cougar looking logo, which is probably, I mean, my guess is that's probably like public domain stuff at this point, would be my guess.
Yes, yeah. Which is probably one like anyone who had any sort of cougar or mountain lion used. Like, it's just a symbol, yeah.
Yeah, so you do that, like you said, the Rolling Hills. And then, I don't know, man, calling it legendary lager, like, it's just kind of perfect. Like, I don't, like, they didn't have to put that little adjective in there, and yet it's both serious and tongue-in-cheek at the same time. It's taking it about as seriously as something like this should be taken, which I just love. So yeah, they really, whoever was, and I'm sure we'll get an answer to this later, but you know, whoever was sort of like heading up the branding and the marketing here really, really, really nailed it. And I think it's going to be spectacular.
Yes. I'm very excited. I, if anyone wants to babysit my kids on Saturday afternoon, I would love to go up to Marco Polo. And go to the lodge, but my wife
and
is
Craig working. Doesn't even and have to know you. You just have to be willing to show up, actually, and just, you know, there's no credentials required, no background check. Just, you know, he's got to agree to be there, so Craig can go drink beer up in Marco Polo.
I got wife's working, mom is also working that day, so I just, you know, I'm stuck, you know, I gotta take care of my kids, should be cool. I'm excited for it. I'm sure Roanoke will get it eventually too, and we know the Flat Stick in Spokane will get it soon. Oh, by the way, I've seen the Flat Stick Tacoma is happening again.
Woo!
I've seen it. It's happening.
We're very
again.
Excited about that.
Yes. Yes. I'm very excited. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, very excited for Old Crimson Legendary Lager. I'm going to drink so much of that fucking beer. Like, oh my God.
Yes.
Like,
it's going to be a staple in my fridge.
Yeah. It's going to always be the side beer. Like, even when it's not the main beer, it's going to be the side beer on the pod. So yeah, good times. Beer. Y'all should buy a ton of it when it's available. Because why not? If you're gonna drink a beer, why not drink the beer with Old Crimson on it? Jeff. So there was a fake football game about
woo We love fake football games.
Almost 2 weeks ago. I mean, yeah. Everyone loves their fake football games. And, Crimson played gray. And it was a tight game.
That's why they call it the Crimson and Gray game.
I can't remember who Did won. You know I know it was 20. It was 22-21.
Crimson won.
Crimson won. Thank you. You know. I can't believe I forgot who won the Crimson and Gray game.
I can't either.
Take my podcaster credentials away.
That's right. What kind of fan are you?
We actually have to apply for them. It's a very rigorous process. It took like months of.
That's right. We went to podcasting school and like,
yes.
They sent us a little certificate in the mail. Like it's about as rigorous as those wedding officiant websites. So
yeah,
official.
That's why there's so few podcasts. Like it's so hard to do.
That's right. The gatekeeping is very strenuous.
Yeah, it's very hard to start a podcast.
Yes.
So yeah.
Lots of barriers.
Jeff. Okay. This game where Cougs played the Cougs and like initial thoughts, is the defense good or is the offense not good? I don't know.
You know,
22 points. Yeah. That's not very impressive.
No, especially after last year, the offensive explosion last year. I think it's a little from column A, a little from column B. I think the defense actually looked pretty good. I don't know about, the pass rush, of course, got like 1,000 sacks because, put
you
a fingertip
have to be near
or a fingernail.
Yeah.
Put a fingernail on the quarterback and the play is over, which is stupid. And the offensive line was missing a ton of players. So I don't know how much you read into the pressure that they got, but I will say up front, they did use a lot of creative pressure packages in the game. It seemed like it was more than normal. Like my recollection is that these games are typically pretty vanilla from the defense, and they seem to throw a lot of looks at both the line and at the quarterbacks. I don't know if, it could just be that I am wrong, which that never happens. But it could be that I'm just wrong that they actually do all this stuff in the spring game. Or if my recollection is correct, it could be that maybe they were, trying to simulate some of that real deal game stuff for, a pair of quarterbacks who are competing for the job, and just kind of see how they handle it. And if that's what it was, they did not handle it very well for quite a while. They lots of pressure, as we just talked about there. Quarterback accuracy was pretty poor. Receivers didn't help him out. I mean, there's definitely no doubt about that. There were some, fair number of catchable balls that were not caught, but, just the accuracy, the dynamism, from the passing game just kind of wasn't there for the most part. Mateer looked, sort of particularly poor. He had a couple of big throws, first play of the game, trick play. Nails a big, long, deep pass to Billy Revere, which, was great, super great. I don't know if that play happens if the defensive lineman that is bearing down on him is able to level him. But, at least,
Yeah, he basically just ran right by him.
Yes.
Yeah, like he's going to go straight into his stomach if that's a real play. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. And so I don't know if Mateer stands in quite as tall, if that's the case. Maybe he does. I don't know. He is a strapping young fellow, so maybe he does. Yep. But so there was that. Mateer had another big play. And then Eckhouse had, a couple of big throws as well. But outside
big
of that,
run as well.
He had a big run as well. And I think that's the, I'll talk about that in a sec. I think that's kind of the X factor here, but As far as passing goes, you know, Mateer was just kind of all over the place. Not real great. And when I say not real great, I mean, he was under 50% completion on the day, which is, in modern football is like beyond abysmal. Eckhouse,
especially
was,
when they can't sack you.
Correct. So Eckhouse was, I don't know. I think he was around 60%, but the yards per attempt were much lower. He just was okay. You know, lots of really short passes, had a couple of deep balls, but nothing really in between, you know, the kind of stuff where you really have to step into a throw and kind of zip it, you know, 15 yards, 20 yards in the air, you know, that sort of thing. So I don't know. He looks to me like a guy who doesn't really have the arm strength to be as effective as we would need to be. He looks like a nice backup. You know, if you need a guy in a pinch or for a game, you can manage around it. But he definitely does not look like a he does not look to me like a like an FBS quarterback. Like just that's just sort of my initial impression. So Mateer still got some work to do. And I think that the key, like sort of like this, you know, the aside that I said earlier was, you know, the running game is going to be part of this. Like you can see it. You can tell that's going to be a weapon, you know, and if, even if Mateer's not, you know, the greatest passer in the world, even if he's maybe like a you know, 55, 57%, you know, completion type guy, the fact that he can do things with his legs are the kinds of things that can, you know, perhaps unlock some things in the passing game, but also just, you know, move the chains a little bit. If you can get, you know, chunks on the ground from your quarterback. I mean, he's 6'1", 215. I mean, he is he's a thick dude. Like this is not like
the running back size.
He's built like a running, not just like, you know, strong. I mean, sometimes you'll get, you know, I don't know. I'm thinking like Oregon State's quarterback last year, right? Uyangalale, like big dude, very strong. Can totally run, but not really like a runner. When you watch Mateer run, it's like, okay, you know, he looks like a running back. He looks like he could actually probably play running back in a pinch if you needed him to. So
like he's tough to tackle.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be part of the deal. I don't think we saw the whole package. I think he does have to get better as a passer, but you know, he's all right. And I do think, you know, the thing I said was little column A, little column B. I do think the secondary played well. I think we are better off there than I thought we would be. And some of that, you know, is just sort of trusting in Jake Dickert a little bit, but
yeah,
which you know, is we fair. Certainly looked capable. Yeah, we looked capable. So.
Yeah. You mentioned the running game, and honestly, you know, one of the things that coming into the spring ball and some of the early video we saw is, you know, you're a bit worried about the running backs. The running backs had some plays. I think all of them had a big play at some point.
Yep.
So I think like they looked all right. They looked capable as, you know, and like you said, like they weren't playing with the starting offensive line. Now at some point there's always injuries on the offensive line. So it's like, I hope like, you know, some of those guys, you know, got better during the spring, because you just, it's rare that you have all five starting offensive linemen play all 12 games or whatever. So yeah, that'll be interesting. I thought like there was some big plays, but yeah, there was a lot of, if the offense tried to go side to side, the defense was definitely gonna beat them that way. You know, they weren't gonna be able to compete that way, which could be a positive. You know, maybe the defense has got speed, maybe especially against the, you know, the Mountain West schools, they're gonna be able to hang with them. I come away thinking, you know, the defense is we're gonna have a solid defense again, as we've typically had under Dickert. And the offense definitely, that question is the quarterback, and yeah, you cannot have a quarterback hitting under 50% of his passes. Like this just can't be happening.
Yes.
But yeah, I hope maybe things are better when offensive line is better in the fall and all that. And, Because that'll be a weird, it'll be a very weird thing for Wazoo in recent history, to not have, like, not be able to throw the ball a bit. Like, that's,
yeah,
that's been even, you know, the Cam Ward's first year, the offense wasn't great, but they still, when they generated yardage, it was through the air. And so, like, it was, you know, so it'd be very weird. You know, we had air raid for so long, and then, you know, under Rolovich and under Dicker, you know, it's been a lot of throwing. And so, yeah. And we're going to Pens, Jeff. We're going to Pens.
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
In the US Open Cup.
We are. Yeah, people who don't know, we are recording while also watching the Sounders in the US Open Cup. And they just played their extra time, and now they're heading to penalties. So yeah, the running backs, like, I think what I loved most about the running backs is, number one, you know, DJ Schlembaker looked markedly better. Not a lot of places for him to run early in the game, but it seemed like there were some adjustments with blocking and some holes opened up, and he looked quicker, he looked lighter. He still doesn't run as big, I think, as he is. Like, you know, a guy his size really ought to be moving some people with some power, but he did show some burst and some speed that I think maybe we didn't see the last couple of years.
He kind of has an upright running style, and I might work against him in terms of the power.
He reminds me of, like, so way old callback is Chris Warren. Reminds me a little bit of Chris Warren.
Oh yeah,
who was not a small running back.
My first favorite football player, probably.
Yeah,
Chris Warren.
Yeah. Not a small running back for the Seahawks, and yet not really a power running back either. So, you know, Schlembaker could definitely be that.
He had a hole. Chris Warren had so many 45-yard touchdowns. Like, it's like crazy how many, like, 40-plus yard touchdowns.
So hopefully that's the case for Schlembaker. Wayshon Parker was incredible. Like, he looks he's an early enrollee freshman. I mean, I didn't know that because I have not followed recruiting nearly as close the last couple of years
he
had up until that point. But he looks like a man. And he's got a burst. And
when I was watching, I was like, "Wait, is that a returner that I don't remember? Was that a transfer that I don't remember?
Yeah, or is this somebody who redshirted or something? No, like, dude should still be in high school right now. And he looked great. So I think between those two guys, and then Dylan Payne was great too.
Yeah. So yeah, if you look at Parker's pick on his profile on the website, he definitely looks like he should still be in high school.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't when he's got a helmet on, man.
Yeah.
He does not when he's got a helmet on. So him, between those two guys and Dylan Payne looked great too, which is, you know, I think it's kind of easy to overlook a guy like that, but he looked great too. And then, you know, Pulalasi got hurt early on in what looked like a very bad, very nasty injury, which as it turned out was not as bad as feared. So, yeah, so running back, I mean, you know, I think we might actually be quite a bit better off there than I thought.
So, might be right in the wishbone.
Yeah. receivers, I think the jury's still out there.
Yeah.
Kyle Williams looks like Kyle Williams. He just looks like, you know, a man, which he is, you know, out there. Carlos Hernandez, you know, flashed some spots. I think he was more a victim of guys who maybe couldn't get into the ball as reliably as, you know, as you would want them to. And then after that, I mean, Freeman's really fast. And the other guys, it was just kind of like,
tough,
you know,
tough getting separation with some of the other guys.
Yeah. And, you know,
I tended to think secondary of all time.
Maybe. And I do think our secondary played reasonably well. And I also think that the quarterbacks,
sorry, he tried to Panenka and he fucked it up. Sorry.
That's the guy who scored the penalty earlier. Put it right off the crossbar challenge, man.
Oops. Oh, yeah.
All right. So, you know, receiver, I mean, but here's the thing. I don't know, man. I don't know that you need four great receivers in this offense. I mean, I think
it's not the air raid
beneficial.
It's not the air raid that we're used to.
Gets hurt. if Kyle Williams gets hurt, we're probably fucked. But like, yeah. I like you said, it's not the air raid. We're not going to need, we don't need to go eight deep here, you know?
Yeah. It's a version of the, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a version of the
air raid. Sorry, y'all. You're getting us watching the Sounders while we're talking. It's a really bad, two bad penalties in a row. One from the Sounders, both one teams.
Louisville.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a version of the air raid, but definitely not like the nine receivers
not the same
version that Mike Leach ran.
Yep. Not the same. So yeah, I mean, I'm not like concerned about receiver yet. But I also don't have the same good feeling that I had after last year's spring game. Like after last year's spring game, I was like, oh yeah, we're fine. We got Kyle Williams, we got Josh Kelly, DT Sheffield looked great. Like it was just like, oh yeah, we're gonna be fine. Because we also knew we had Lincoln Victor. We're like, great, we got Cam four. Ward. Yeah, we got Cam Ward thrown. Okay, we got four good dudes. We're good. Here it's kind of like, I got two guys I feel pretty good about. I got one guy who looks like sort of Renard Bell, you know, decided to come back for a 10th year. And then after that, it's kind of like, you know, so I think that.
Are we
sure
Renard Bell does not have any more eligibility? Are we sure?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, Freeman sure looks like him. So
is eligibility more of an idea than an actual concrete concept at this point?
It might be at this point. I will say one area where I think we look fairly loaded is linebacker. We just kind of look to have dudes everywhere at linebacker. You know, there's a transfer. I think McKenna is his name. You see, you got him. You got Thornton is back. There's a freshman whose name is completely escaping me and everybody talked about for 2 weeks. And so now I feel like an idiot for not remembering his name. But anyway, you know, there's a lot of dudes there at linebacker. So they look very, very good at linebacker. As far as the secondary goes, like we said, I think the secondary looked pretty decent. The kid from Akron, again, whose name is escaping me. I'm sorry. I'm an idiot. Should have looked all this up before we started. But he looked really good as well. Like really, really good. Like he is going to step right into safety. And then one of the early enrollee freshmen, Edmund, he had a really nice play on a goal line playing in the nickel. So, and we know what Gushikin can do. You know, he's back. He looks like he's sort of locked into the nickel spot. I think defense looked okay. I think we're going to be all right.
Yeah. The Akron, are you talking about Tyson Durant?
That's exactly who I'm talking. Thanks, Greg.
Yep.
That's who I'm talking about.
Yep. I think, yeah, defense solid, like secondary looking solid. Honestly, with the schedule we have now, like we used to fret so much about size in the middle and stuff, you know, and it's just like, you probably don't need the big dudes up front like you used to be honest. Yeah. Like it's just, but yeah, as long as they can just, they can hold their own. If you got that, the linebackers, secondary, it looks like they're doing pretty well in those positions. Yeah, I think, yeah, I could see them having like a top 50 defense again, as they've typically had with Dickert.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that's a reasonable expectation. Oh, Dean Janikowski made all his kicks.
That's good. He had some trouble at the end of the year last year,
including the game winner. He nailed the game winner.
Yes, he did.
You, by the way, just as an aside, you cannot convince me that he was not hurt at the end of last year. I don't know what it was, but I am 100% convinced that he was dealing with something that was not being disclosed, because he was so good and then he was so bad and now he looks fine again. And I don't know, man. Someday the real story is going to come out on that one.
Yeah. This is a terrible PK set.
my eyes just rolled way back into my head.
Oh, Leo Chu, my God.
Our most experienced players have been our worst penalty takers in this game. Dear God.
Danny Leva had a great penalty.
Yes, he did.
Chuck and Chew. Like,
God damn it.
It was so awful.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, yeah, here we go. This is, oh, and this is not for it, but.
No, but it's, yeah, it's not so for
Jeff,
it.
Jeff and I are watching.
Sorry.
Round of 32 U.S. Open Cup.
Right. With a literal second team.
All
right.
Well, they got it. They got to make it to stay alive here.
Yep.
But yeah, alive. So spring game, Jeff, like, you know, while we're watching the U.S. Open Cup, what are you drinking?
Yeah. Well, speaking of soccer themes, I have picked up a Gold Dot Connoisseur's Choice Export Lager, also known as a Dortmunder, which is relevant because Borussia Dortmund is in the UEFA Champions League final.
Yeah.
Woo! After beating PSG on Tuesday, I guess Tuesday's yesterday as we're recording this.
What a pen. God. That was a hell of a fucking pen.
Kid kicked the shit out of that thing. Good Lord. That scared the fuck out of me. I thought he skied.
They had a 40% chance of just like.
Good God.
Ended up in the lake.
That kid whipped it. All right. Anyway, to celebrate our beloved black and yellows, I picked up a Gold Dot export.
Olé, yes, con de me, mami.
That's right.
All right. Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah. So, hey, babe. We're going. We're playing Real Madrid.
Yes.
Yes! All right. One more and we win. Save.
Let's go.
For our
Thomas
big buff Australian goalkeeper. All right. So anyway, so that's why I picked that one. I thought that was a good celebration for our boys from Germany making it to the final. Now we get to play Real Madrid and send those fuckers back to Spain with their heads hanging in shame for ultimate glory.
In Wembley, and Dortmund was also in the Champions League final. The last time Dortmund was in the Champions League final was the last. Oh,
oh for fuck's sake! God damn it!
What a shitty pen, dude. Oh my
God. This is just great podcasting.
Oh my God. Okay. Oh yeah. So last time Dortmund was in the Champions League final was it was in Wembley. Like, that was also the last time it was in Wembley. Now, it could have, it looked like it was going to be the same matchup, Bayern versus Dortmund, which was in in 2013 in Wembley.
Yeah.
But Bayern fucked that up. They got Real Madrid-ed at the end.
They had a 1-0 lead with 2 minutes to go in regulation. In regular time, and Real Madrid
won.
All right. So anyway, Real Madrid scored 2 goals in the last like 2 minutes of regulation, and then 5 minutes in. Anyway, this is not soccer talk. Craig, what are you drinking?
Yeah. So I went deep into the cellar for this one. Honestly, it was not my typical cellar beer, but. In honor of the Cougs having a beer, and also in honor of one of the brewers of this beer being recently getting engaged. So this is a homebrew beer made by my friends Brian and Brad Logan. This is literally like... Jeff, I think they gave this to me at that like birthday party I had. I think they did.
The one when you lived in Olympia?
Yeah. So I think this beer is like 8 years old.
Oh, shit.
They're probably like listening and going to correct me. But I think.
What a fucking save, dude. I'm sorry. What a save.
That was a sick save. And how it bounced up into his hands. He got it with his feet. Oh,
catches it on the line. That is so awesome.
That was so
anyway, good. 8 years ago. Ozzy beer was given to you 8 years ago.
It's called No Chain Breaker by the Crimson Cottage Brewing Company. homebrew. It is a an homage to the Deschutes beer Chainbreaker white IPA. So I think they were trying to make a white IPA. I mean, it doesn't. Yes! Keeper!
Keeper on Keeper!
Keeper! Keeper on Keeper to win!
Yeah, look at it.
He got the save and then he won the game. What and a fucking guy. Just
blasted it in.
Sorry. Oh,
Sounders win!
Brian and Brad, like, talk about our beer.
Okay, yeah. Sorry. Back to the beer.
Sorry. Yeah. So it is. I think it's an homage to Chainbreaker White IPA, which went away for a while, and they brought it back recently. And it is actually, when I opened it, I think I was talking to you as I opened it. I thought, like, this is definitely gonna be affected. It's like a home brewed, home bottled beer. It's 8 years old. There's gonna be some bugs. Yeah. It is not infected. It is clean. There are no like significant like tart weird kind of infection off flavors. So cheers to that, Brad Bryan. Like I give you lots of props.
Hell yeah.
And it smells like a very old IPA. Like the hops are long like just dead. But it actually. It's sweet. It tastes fine. Like it tastes fine. Like I've had worse beers than this many times. It tastes good. Like honestly, I'm just fine drinking it. Like you know, it still has good head. It has good head retention. Like it. Like I'm impressed. Like this, I was so like hesitant when I poured it. I only poured like a little bit. To try it first, just in case it was like super infected and I didn't want to drink because it was a 22 ounce bottle. But yeah, Crimson Cottage Brewing, Brad Bryan.
Yeah.
Logan.
It kicks ass.
Good job. Like it tastes good. And also congrats to Brian and Gingy getting engaged. Very cool on the top of a mountain.
Extremely
very cool.
Yes.
So yeah. Good job, guys. The beer is still drinkable and it doesn't suck. So proud of y'all. Bet you didn't think I would save this thing for 8 years, but I did. And now I'm drinking it finally.
I love it. That's fantastic.
Yeah. All right. I was just saving it, you know, saving it for a very special day, whatever that is.
Yeah. This is that day.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Day.
Like this is that day.
This day, May 8th, 2024. That's what I was saving it for. May 8th, 2024. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, Jeff, so that was the beer. Let's talk some hoops. Obviously, woo! David Riley is trying to build a roster. And
yes.
He has, since we last talked, he had another Iwu guy in Eric Strip, who was kind of their backup big, who shot a lot of threes last year. Shot a lot.
Literally the next morning after we recorded.
Yep.
The podcast had been up for a couple of hours when Eric Strip committed. So.
And honestly, Eric Strip's interesting. Actually, it's funny. Torvik projects him to play a lot in the current roster.
Yes.
And it, which he was like a high usage player when he did play. So very, very offensive focus.
Not afraid to shoot.
Yep. And then they've also since added, I don't know how to say his name, Rihards Vavers.
Vavers? I'm going to go with that. Rihards Vavers.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Vavers.
From Quinnipiac. Out of the Mac, not the Mac,
the Mac,
Mac.
Yep.
He was injured last year, but I'd say he still wasn't particularly like a top player on their team. They were the best team in the Mac, but that gets you 172 on Kempong.
Yep.
So he did have some good efficiency numbers. He definitely is a scorer, a shooter. you know, 6'7" wing guy. So I'm sure that height was appealing. But yeah. Like, you know, I'm a little skeptical based on like we're taking like the sixth man off of a Mac team, like a Mac team.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. It just depends on where he is in the rotation and what they're expecting him to do, you know?
Right. He, like, something I said on our members only Slack was that it's pretty obvious David Riley has a type, you know, and maybe he even has like multiple types, right? Where he's, you know, he's sort of, finding guys of similar size and skill sets to fill roles, which, you know, is kind of an interesting way, I guess, to go about it. I mean, if we make the air raid comparison, right? I mean, it's, you know, similar kind of deal, you know, finding guys with certain attributes to sort of plug and play, right? And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if Riley, if that's truly what he's doing here. Because when you look at Vavers, I mean, he's what is he? 6'7", right? 6'7", 195. You know, pretty much built exactly like, you know, say a Steel Ventnor's, right? Like, you know, similar, yep. Extremely similar profile in just about every way, especially when they were freshmen. So, and Vavers is, you know, was a freshman, will be a sophomore, this year. So he seems to really like those tall, lanky shooters. You know, the point guards he's been connected with are, you know, short-ish, not short, but, you know, like compared to the rest of the roster, you know, 6 foot, 6'1", you know, that sort of thing. So you just kind of go like, okay, is he just sort of recruiting types at this point, which is a really different philosophy than what Kyle Smith did. And not to say that, you know, everything Kyle Smith did was the right way to do things, because there's a lot of different ways to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. But, you know, Kyle Smith was mostly concerned with just getting dudes. You know, like, hey, give me, it's the old, you know, it's Jimmy's and Joe's, not X's and O's, right? Like, obviously there's X's and O's, but, you know, Kyle was mostly concerned with getting guys who were talented enough, you know, to truly compete at the level they were playing. And then he would figure out a way to make them effective, right? Like, we would devise a way, like, you know, this year's a great example. You know, I don't think there was any point in the previous 4 years when two bigs was a regular part of the rotation. I could be wrong about that. Maybe, I don't know, maybe with, you know, Pollard and I don't know, maybe, like, I'm trying to remember, but certainly not as like a staple, as it was this year. And yet, because of his personnel, because he had Isaac Jones, who, you know, as we learned, was a total bucket. And then you had, you know, these two centers who, you know, brought different skill sets. And so you just learned how to play with two bigs. And they figured out a way to put together an offense with two bigs, because that was their best personnel. And I wonder with Riley, I'm very curious. Like, I'm not down. I'm not casting really literally any judgments at all right now. I'm just like, it's different. And that makes me curious.
Yeah, for sure. It does seem that, you know, he's trying to be, obviously he's trying to get shooters. He wants shooters on the floor. But you know what I'd say at the roster now, they are going to add more players, and they need to add more players, and the players need to add need to be starting quality players.
Yes.
Like, because right now, as the roster stands, it's 114 on the projection on Bart Torvik, and that, you know, we don't want to go back there. We've already been there.
Yeah.
We don't want to go back.
I mean, 114 is basically, you're talking a starting five of like Isaiah Watts, Rehards Vavers, Lawan Watts, Ethan Price, Dane Erick Strip, and then the rest of the minutes being filled out by essentially like Marcus, we don't really Wilson, have freshman. A rest freshman. Of the roster. I mean, you got Marcus Wilson, a freshman, Case a lot Wynott, of freshman. So in the projection,
some walk-ons.
In the projection, basically the Bart's projection just says, okay, generic roster filler player has, you know, plays, you know, like less than 30% of the minutes, usage of about 19%, and an offensive rating of 89, which is really terrible. Yeah,
he
obviously,
he had no way to project AJ LeBeau and the Corpello brothers and Parker Garrett. Like, he just
so all these generic players now, that are filling out the roster right now are
Case Wynot would play over those players probably.
Yeah, and none of those guys are back anyway. They're all like the Corpellas left mid-season.
Yeah, the Corpellas haven't been around since the middle of the year. And
but I mean, you know, his roster doesn't.
Actually, that's so I'm going to email him right now. Because I DM him because I have done that and he's changed the roster before.
Yeah. So like he did add Case Wynot because Wynot was not part of the roster before and now he is. So, I mean it's all just really it depends on how they fill out the rest of the roster and you know the case I made in the newsletter is that they really for the team to be as good as we would like it to be they need to add a dude. And to be honest, the only guy that is even on the radar as a potential dude that might actually stick around is Jalen Wells. They're not on the radar of any other, just like transfer dude. It's a little, I'm not sure what to make of it. I mean, I'm curious what you think. Like, you know, one thing you mentioned to me was that, the transfers that we got in the past when we were, so we would get down transfers who, for whatever reason, were not, successful where they were before, a guy like Justin Powell, right, comes to mind. And then the up transfers we got were guys who were like the best guys on their team, the best guys at their level, guys like Isaac Jones, Jalen Wells, whatever those
Michael Flowers,
right. Terrell Roberts, even though, he didn't totally pan out still, same kind of deal. That's not really what we've done here at all. The guys that we have up transferred have not been that. Now, if we get Cedric Coward, okay. Right now that's a guy, best guy on his team. One of the best guys in his league. Okay. But all these other guys, none of them, fit that bill. So it's definitely different. It makes me a little skeptical of what the ceiling might be for the team. I suspect that we have, struck out on some guys, which, maybe that's to be expected, given our, our conference situation.
Well, yeah, Jeff, if you want a real reality check, when you go to the projection, like the overall, all the teams, the rankings on Torvik's site, it's Oregon State's 114.
I know where you're about to go.
Washington State's 115. And right next to both of their names is WCC.
WCC.
Which is a mind fuck and a real reality. Yes. Like, it's just wild. Yes.
The worst.
Yeah. Currently. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, we'd be probably fifth in the WCC with this current roster as projected on Bartorvik. And that's not where we want to be.
No.
So yeah, but they are going to add more guys.
They will. Yep.
It seems unlikely that Jalen's going to come back. I don't want to like rain on.
Yes, it does.
Parade, but
no, honestly, that, I mean,
I think he's going to get drafted. I honestly think,
I hope so. I sure hope so.
And that's what I've thought, because I think he's just the type of guy that maybe NBA teams didn't know a lot about, and they've had to learn more about him, and the more they get to know him, are gonna fall in love with what he has to offer, and someone's gonna be like, yeah, we're drafting that guy, because honestly, this draft isn't that strong too. And so he's a 6'8" guy that can shoot, that has some like ball skills and can play defense. He's definitely a guy, and he's only 20 still. Definitely a guy that would be appealing to an NBA GM. So I hope it for him, because I think if he doesn't get drafted, some program's gonna give him a lot of money, and he's not gonna come back to WASU, even if he wants to. it's going to be hard to turn down the money that he'll get.
Yeah. I mean, there's some pretty crazy numbers being thrown around out there right now because of the, you know, just sort of like supply and demand, right? Like there just aren't that many players left out there, impact players. And those that are still holding out are, you know, starting to see some pretty big offers because teams are desperate. So, yeah. So we'll see. I think you're right. I mean, I think it's doubtful. You know, if you add Coward into Torvik's projection, that takes you up to 89. So I guess that's
and better. And then they've also still been connected not great with a guy named Khalil Brantley.
Yep.
And that would bump him up a little bit too.
Yep.
But yeah, you know, if they, you know, if Jalen came back, they'd be like a potential tournament team. But like, you know, you can't rely on that. Yep. But yeah. So yeah, basketball still, you know, this is like the, as we've seen the last couple years, the roster building on basketball is just an ongoing process, and it's almost never ending until the season starts.
There will be a team. I can be certain of that.
Yep. Yeah.
Beyond that, I don't know.
Yeah. Hopefully they get a little better. Jeff, an interesting thing. Now, we don't know if the men's basketball team or the women's basketball team is going to be playing UW this season, but we know one team that is not going to be playing UW is soccer. They released their schedule, and they will not be playing University of Washington this year. Now, what do you think about that, Jeff?
So I'm of two minds on that one. I definitely, you know, as I wrote about for the newsletter, I didn't think we should play, you know, the Football Apple Cup. You know, we've talked about that on the show, like for many reasons. Not the least of which just, I don't fucking want to anymore with those assholes. But I always assumed that in the non-revenue sports or the lower revenue sports that we would play them. Just merely because scheduling is tough, you know, scheduling's not easy for our schools. You know, so I assumed we would continue to play Washington in a non-conference, basis because, you know, just geography, right? I mean, there's a perfectly great opponent 300 miles away that you can go play. It's the same reason we play, you know, still play Gonzaga in all these sports, you know, for years and years and years after their basketball team, you know, did what they did. Right. So, you know, I just assumed we would, and now it's kind of looking like maybe we're not going to just do that. Cause you know, no soccer, we haven't heard about volleyball yet, or if we have, I've missed it, but I don't think we have.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm trying to think, like, if I would be disappointed if we didn't play Washington this year in basketball. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, I hate the idea of those assholes getting anything, but I also know that, like, you know, these other sports other than football, I think the symbolism is just not quite as thick.
Yeah. Football is the reason that this all happened. It's not soccer. It's not volleyball.
Right.
It's not even basketball. It's football. Yeah. So yeah, I think there could be like a grace period where it's like, fuck you, UW, we're not playing you. I think it'll come back. Yeah. It would be the opposite of what I would, like, I really still just don't want to play him in football. And I just because that was the whole reason for all of it. But yeah, like, also these other sports, like, we've been competing with them. We've been doing well against them, for years. I've seen the basketball teams beating UW and the, you know, at UW, that's been fun, and that would be kind of extra fun if it would happen now. But the football is just like, I don't fucking care. I don't want to do it. But I'll probably be a flat stick for some pregame party in September, though. But yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, I could see basketball definitely playing them. There's more games. I could mm-hmm. see baseball playing them because of the amount of yep. games. Even some midweek, they could play some midweek games against them. You know, the way they play Gonzaga now. So it'll be interesting to see. Soccer has a schedule. They WCC mostly schedule, and they definitely loaded some tough like road games and stuff to bolster the schedule and to try to make up for the overall schedule. But obviously there's you know, Portland's a great program in the WCC. Gonzaga is a good program, but you know, outside of that, I'm not really sure. I don't really know.
Yeah.
Outside of the Northwest teams.
Me either.
Yep. I think other than that, Jeff, we can talk about the baseball team. They are careening to a pretty rough season. It's been a lot of tough games. They picked up one from Oregon State. That was nice.
They did get one. They had an 8-run lead heading into the ninth.
Yep.
And then gave up 7, but won the game.
10-2 and held on. They lost to Portland on Tuesday. They got USC coming into town this weekend, and then Oregon, and then the season's over. It's been definitely they had some promise earlier in the year, beating Kentucky, and then they should have beaten TCU. I still think they had a home run that if there was a better angle, they would have been reversed. When Taylor threw that gem against UW in the first game in that series, it looked like they were actually in a pretty good place. They had a good record in conference and good record overall.
Kind of middle of the pack.
UW whipped them after that, and they've just had real struggled ever since then. And it's been rough going. So baseball. That's why we haven't talked about it as much, because we kind of mostly only talk about it when they're doing good.
It's not very much fun.
Yeah, never very much fun. But what is fun is that we will soon have a Coug beer to drink, and I'm excited about that.
Yes.
Jeff, I think that's all we talked about, and here we are at the end of the podcast.
I think so.
What we have not been doing a very good job is promoting ourselves. And you can be a premium subscriber to Podcast Versus Everyone, podcastversuseveryone.com. I believe, Jeff, what is it, $5 a month or $50 a year? You can have access to our members only Slack, which is a lot of fun. There's actually a lot of insider information, not just from us, but from the members in there. That is pretty cool. There's stuff that I get to know through it. So it's a pretty fun interaction. Some really smart people talking about all sorts of the sports. And we also have some just random chats about, you know, what you're drinking, what you're watching, what the Mariners are doing, things like that. I've had a lot of fun with it. I really like it. We've also had some bonus content, some great breakdowns from Bryce Hendricks, and including he also had to Ask Me Anything with him in the chat. Some bonus recordings that we've done as well, bonus little podcasts, little 15-20 minute hits there. So yeah, like that, that's, you know, if you want to sign up, be a premium subscriber, you can do that. If you can also subscribe to us at Podcast Versus Everyone, if you just want to have the newsletter sent directly to your inbox, podcast sent directly to your inbox, you get it first that way, all that. So, and that's free. But yeah, so Jeff, did I leave anything out? Did I do a good job?
No, I think that's it, man. I think we got
it. Yeah. Cool. Well, with that, I'll say, go fucking Cougs.
Go fucking Cougs, Craig. Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
Get vaccinated.
Get vaccinated.
Support a union.
Hell yeah. It's May. It was just May 1st.